Support for this podcast and the following message come from Allianz Travel Insurance. You've got big plans ahead. Protect your adventures for the next 365 days with an all-trips annual travel insurance plan. Learn more and get a quote at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.
Hi, I'm Adam from Kansas City.
I'm Dan Manchester from Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Hi, I'm Marie from Salt Lake City, Utah.
The Sound of Young America is an independent production supported by listeners like you and me.
If you'd like to donate to support the show,
visit MaximumFun.org, click on Donate.
Live on tape from my house in Los Angeles, I'm Jesse Thorne, and this is The Sound of Young America from MaximumFun.org.
Radio sweetheart, on the airways, it's the sound of young America. Maximum Fun, Maximum Fun, Maximum Fun.
On this Sound of Young America podcast, my guest is soul music legend Bill Withers. Before we get to the interview, let's hear a bit of one of his signature hits, Use Me.
My friend, yes, feels their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me.
It's The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest on the program, Bill Withers, is one of soul music's greatest singers and one of soul music's greatest songwriters. It's an honor to have you on the show. Thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you. No problem.
You grew up in West Virginia, in a sort of coal mining region, and your dad was a coal miner. And I wonder if it was the sort of place where you were either a coal miner or you were leaving town, you know, when you were 19?
Yeah, when you grew up, you made that choice, you know. I made the choice to go in the Navy. The coal mines held no particular fascination for me.
were there people for whom they held fascination?
Some people, not a lot of people from my generation, or the people that I knew, went into coal mines because you saw what it did to your father, you know. I mean, there was the black lung disease. There was just the whole look and feel of it. And if you think you have other choices, you know, if I gave you two choices, okay, take this shovel and dig a hole in the ground and go down in it, or go do something else.
I'd probably take something else.
Yeah.
Seems like at least even money.
Yeah.
Did you think about different ways? Did you think about different ways to get out of town, or was the Navy just the first thing that came along?
Well, some people moved to cities, you know, and they, you know, like New York and, you know, Dayton, Ohio, anywhere, you know. It was dangerous. It's a dangerous place. You know, it's the only place that I've ever been. I went back down in there later in life just to see what it was. It's the only place that's both wet and dusty. The two don't go together.
No, sir.
It's wet and dusty and, you know, you're under the ground.
You know, at the same time, the Navy isn't exactly the promise of a danger-free life.
No, but, you know, I got a chance to go to aircraft mechanic school. I had, you know, I worked on airplanes. I wasn't flying in them. I don't know what could happen to me. I mean, you know, I could drop a wrench on my foot or something. or walk into a propeller, but, you know, I learned quickly how to avoid that, you know.
You know, my dad was in the Navy just after you left, and a friend of his was killed by a rope on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
Yeah. Those cables can break, and they whip around, and they can cut you in half. Or if you're not careful, you could become too comfortable and walk into a propeller or get sucked up into a jet engine. That's life. You can drink too much and get excited about your new Porsche and go out on the Pacific Coast Highway and kill yourself. So there's a lot of ways to die. What we try to do is to lessen the probability of that event.
Yeah. That's fair.
You know what I mean?
I read an interview in which you said that music really wasn't part of your life when you were in the service. Is that true?
Yeah. No, it wasn't, you know.
Were you thinking about
it? Where would you do it? What are you going to do? You're going to go play in one of those Navy bands and go,
let the record state that you indicated falling asleep.
It's not very sensual, you know.
But you could, you know, there might be room for a guitar or a ukulele or something like that.
Yeah, was it something that you were, but I didn't have that kind of, I couldn't play a guitar or ukulele.
And it's smaller than a guitar. Sorry, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to suggest that you were a ukulele
really
get player.
Really funky on the ukulele. I'm surprised James Brown didn't have one in his band.
Ukulele, hit me. One,
yeah,
two.
But I did see a guy from Hawaii. Jimmy Buffett had a guy in his band for a while who made it a very interest. He's like a virtuoso. I forget his name. But he is something, you know, so people can turn anything.
What were your best memories of that time? What was the best part about that first, you know, 8-9 years of your adult life?
Being in the Navy?
Yeah.
Well, there was a certain validation for me. At that time, if you were black, you expect to be a steward or something, you know, the guys that serve the officers, you know, like you see in the movies and stuff. So there was a chance to prove yourself that you could do technical things. I remember arriving in Pensacola, Florida when I was 18 years old and having to overcome the perception that you weren't smart enough to be an aircraft mechanic. I mean, what kind of genius does it take to change some spark plugs or something? So the noble pursuit of trying to change perceptions, you see?
Mm-hmm.
You got to remember, there was the 60s. Do you see what's going on in Iran now with the street stuff? Well, when I was young, that was my reality if I went to Birmingham. You know what I mean? You didn't have to go. You didn't even need to go very far. That was my time in life where you were trying to change perceptions.
When you got out of the Navy, you held a sort of a variety of regular guy type jobs, the kind of jobs that people hold when they get out of the service for a while. When did it occur to you to become a musician?
I knew from, you don't, when you have a talent like that, you know you have it when you're 5 years old. It's just getting to it. You know, it's getting around to it.
Winter night in Harlem. Oh, old radiator won't get hot. Well, the mean old landlord, he don't care if I freeze to death or not. Saturday night in Harlem, everything's all right. You can really swing and shake your pretty thing. The party's out of sight.
Sunday morning. That was Harlem from Bill Withers' first release, Just As I Am. You were about 30 when you made your first demos, right?
Yeah, somewhere around, you know. I mean, probably older than that, you know.
Most people get over the hump thanks to the kind of heedless optimism of being a 19-year-old or whatever. You know, they know they have this thing inside them, and the thing that gets them to get over the scary bits is just that they're, you know, they just don't care because they're a teenager. Whereas you took that step when you were a grown man.
And that's why you're sitting here talking to me, because I ain't most people. You know?
Okay.
How many most people do you go to the trouble of talking to? I'm giving you a hard time. But that's true. You see, I've been most people. I spent some part of my life as most people, into my 30s as most people. Once I transitioned out of that most people category and did something, you know, whatever it was, you know, then a different set of rules apply. You watch football games?
Sure.
Okay, you figure on Sunday maybe there's 20, 40 million guys watching football games. 1,000 of them think they could, or maybe 10,000 of them think that if they got the chance, they could play quarterback. 3 of them probably could. So I was one of those guys that was, you know, living around, and I saw these, I think I could do that. It's like becoming a Playboy centerfold. I have run into people who have expressed a desire to be in Playboy, who it's unfortunate because they just ain't that cute, you know what I mean? So in the process, in this big funnel, you got all these people. And it's hard to do, you know, to get into a business like this. First of all, you got to have the talent. And then you got to figure out the terrain, you know. What's the path to it? I'm from Slab Fork, West Virginia, so I managed to figure this out. And, you know, through some luck and some conniving or whatever. The question you get asked most often is, how'd you get started? You know, if I knew how to write the book on how to get into show business, I wouldn't have time to talk to you. I'd be too busy working on my book because I could sell a lot of books.
Was there a point when you felt like you had made it through that funnel and that you were achieving this thing that you had kind of convinced yourself that you were capable of achieving? Was it when you made your first record, had your first show?
You know, one of the funniest analogies I've ever heard? This guy was talking about, he had a blind friend. And he became very angry with the blind friend. And he says, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to kick his... And the guy says, you can't do that. He's blind. He says, oh, he'll know because I'm going to tell him who's kicking his. So when that happens, you know it. You know, they let you know. It's not like you could have a hit record and you don't know about it. You know, you need some epiphany for somebody to tell you, hey, man, you've broken through. You know what I mean? It's like,
ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. Wonder this time where she's gone.
wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home anytime she goes away.
How did it compare to what you had built up in your mind how it was going to be like when it happened? I mean, your first record was a big hit, and it was a tiny record. Like, it was a record that I read you made it in 9 hours of recording time.
You mean the album or the
first album?
Yeah, something like that.
But the first album had a couple of huge hit singles on it, and you know, so it's this tiny thing that really worked out the way that you would hope that it would work out.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how did the actual experience of having a hit record, being a famous musician, compare to your idea of what it would be like?
There's a gratitude. Oh, man, finally something that I thought I could do worked out. Because there was a lot of stuff that you thought you could do that didn't happen, you know, when you didn't make the football team, or the girl you thought was flirting with you, you know, really had something in her eye, or coming from where I come from, you know, when you're a kid, you think you can jump across this creek, and you miscalculate, and then you got to go home and change, you know, because you got mud and water all over you. So you know, there's that thing. Then a lot of things change socially, you know what I mean? I mean, there's a business reality to it. You find out that there's some pretty, you know, there's some pretty mean people in this business.
Bullets look better, I must say. Rather when they coming at you. But going out the other way. And please call up the Reverend, call up the Reverend Harris. Tell him to ask the Lord to do some good things for me, Lord. Oh. Tell him I ain't gonna live to get much older. Shot me in my shoulder.
It's the Sound of Young America, and I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is soul music legend Bill Withers. We'll have more with Bill in just a minute when we come back.
Production of The Sound of Young America is supported in part by Ask Metafilter. Thousands of life's little questions answered. Online at ask.metafilter.com.
Are you or is your business interested in reaching The Sound of Young America's awesome audience? Via podcast, radio, and the World Wide Web, The Sound of Young America can connect you with the only people that matter, the awesome ones. Underwriting on The Sound of Young America reaches tens of thousands of clued-in listeners, and it supports the show, too. If you're interested in underwriting on The Sound of Young America, contact us directly at underwriting@MaximumFun.org. That's underwriting@MaximumFun.org. Welcome back to The Sound of Young America. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is soul legend Bill Withers. He's featured in the new documentary, Soul Power. Have you seen the movie yet?
Yeah.
I watched it on Friday. And one of the things that I was really amazed by in watching you in the movie is that, you know, the first 25% or third of the movie is you and all these amazing musicians, you know, getting on an airplane and heading to Zaire to do this concert. And it's you and the Spinners and Celia Cruz and the Fania All-Stars, and, you know, they're like playing claves on the airplane, and you know, it's really amazing. And of course, James Brown and Muhammad Ali and Don King and all these people are on their way over there.
No, they were already Muhammad. They were there.
Well, you're not on the same airplane, but everybody's. Yeah. It's sort of like this process of everybody going over there, and everybody has this. Everybody has a really different tone to this on this trip. You know what I mean? And there's like, you know, James Brown by that point had spent the last 15 years being, you know, one of America's greatest entertainers, and approached the whole thing like, now I'm the world's greatest entertainer. And you're very quiet in the footage, and you're almost like, look like you're just taking it in. And I wonder what it was like for you to be in this kind of crazy gaggle of brilliant performers going and doing something, you know, 10,000 miles from where you lived, what it felt like to be.
Well, people have different approaches, you see. I think you approach things according to your personality. And James Brown's personality is different from mine. James Brown,
to say the least.
James Brown's delivery was dancing, and you know, and it's fascinating. I mean, it's totally interesting. Mine was sitting on a stool with an acoustic guitar, you know. So that in itself would dictate the differences in the approach and the behavior. So that's just not my personality, you know what I mean?
There's a scene where you're eating, looks like maybe lunch, and you're sitting between Muhammad Ali and Don King.
And
it was the most amazing thing to see, and all I could think is what it must be like to be you sitting in between, and I'll use a word that we'll have to bleep on the radio, but basically history's two greatest shit talkers. And just kind of taking it all in. So I wonder, what was it like to be there with these guys who are just the amazing champions of bravado, and be, you know, still Bill?
It's entertaining, you know. It's entertaining because, you know, people pay a lot of money to see them, and you get them for free. You get them in the rawest form. And it's just, you know, it's just hanging out. I happened to be sitting there eating, and everybody came and joined me at the table. It was fun. You know, hey, man, you know, you're here. You got all these characters and personalities and stuff. You can't ask for any more than that, you know.
Maybe the lateness of the hour. Makes me seem bluer than I am. But in my heart there is a shower. Hope she'll be happier with him. I can't believe that she don't wanna see me. And loved with each other so long.
I never thought that she really would leave me. But she's gone. Maybe the darkness of the makes me seem lonelier than I am. Over the darkness I have no power. Hope she'll be happier.
Bill Withers performing Hope She'll Be Happier from the new concert film Soul Power. You basically full-on retired from music 20-some years ago. Why do you think you were so done with it when you were done with it?
I'm not done with it, you know. Let me tell you something. You know,
but I would think that, you know if you wanted to do it...
We all live inside ourselves, right? If you got people asking you over and over again, why are you doing this and why are you doing that, you know, most people don't have to go through that. You just go. So people ask you, why are you doing it? Where are you going? Just tell them something, you know, to tell them you chew on that for a while. But, I mean, I've written stuff. I had fun writing stuff, Jimmy Buffett stuff. George Benson has a new record coming out that I wrote the song. You know, that there's stuff to do. But maybe I may have... I have another option. I'm a songwriter. You know, when I had some kids, I didn't want to be in Philadelphia and my kids are here. So there's this cookie-cutter perception that somebody makes up and you're supposed to fit into it. I don't have to do that. I have choices, you know. I can take my own approach.
Do you enjoy the performance part of it? Like, I mean, if you were talking about doing a show once a month in Los Angeles or something like that, is that something that you think you would still get a kick out of?
Probably, but it's not a practical thing to do. You know, this stuff, there's a business reality that it costs money to put people together. To put people together to play one show. It's not profitable. It's not a good business. Plus, if you have the option, you know, I'm a songwriter. I mean, I don't need any equipment. I can do it out of my head. I can write it on a piece of napkin or tissue paper or toilet paper, you know, for that matter. You know, people used to say to you, well, you shouldn't worry about it. You know, let me handle this and you just go do what I tell you. In whose world? In whose world? You know, I used to have a little poem in my mind. You know, the manager's son goes to Yale and the blues man's son goes to jail. See? The one thing that kept me away out of this music for a lot, you asked me why I started late? You know, my father was this coal miner, but he was always interested in reading, never got a chance to go to school, but he read and he, you know, dignity was very important to him. The first thing that I had to resolve in my life, and the one thing that was very important to me, and I had to sort this out, can I go into this thing and avoid the minstrelness of it. This is a business. And you got some cold pimps that will mail you out until you'll die in your grave. You got as many thieves in this stuff as so there's a life you have to run. And you do the best you can. And hopefully, as a human being, you improve. I'm 70 years old. I mean, I'm not some kind of mindless troubadour. You know, I have an intellect I have to manage. I have some thoughts I have to manage. I have a life I have to maintain. I want to know where my stuff is, you know. I want to know who I am. I don't want to be some simple-minded blues boy. You can bleep this out. Kiss my ass with that shit. So I'm doing the best I can to grow and improve my lineage as a species. So I got some responsibilities that require that I be available. You know, I never had the benefit of formal education. But I've always wanted to better myself. I can speak the language. I can write it, make it rhyme for you if you want to. You know what I mean? And somebody said education is the sum total of what you know. That's everything from tying your shoe to whether you can do quadratic equations or not. So I'm not saying this should be a template for everybody, but that's just the kind of person that makes sense for me to be. Hopefully the music that I made, you know, is useful to somebody. I mean, I get letters from people, that nice letters that people say, hey, man, my grandmother died and your song helped me. I like that kind of stuff, you know. As a result, it was important to me, as best I could, to try to wind up with a life that had some stability and some dignity in it. You know, it's like people approach you as if to say, well, my God, Hugh, how come you are not? I'm 70 years old. I made some choices earlier than that. That I wanted to be a complete person, not just this entertainer thing, you know. It doesn't fill up my plate. I love it. Who wouldn't like it, you know? It doesn't fill up my plate.
It's such an honor to have you share this time with us. Thank you so much for
thank you, man, and I appreciate it. And who knows, tomorrow, you know, you might see my name.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you get on the bill somewhere, you got my $50.
Bathroom walls, all over the place.
I gotta say, my interest in you doing some shows in L.A. is just because I've worn out the grooves on.
No, I'm flattered. I'm flattered. I appreciate that. You know, I'm flattered. I appreciate it. You know, I'll do the best I can.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Withers.
Thank you.
You can find Bill Withers' amazing music at music retailers around the country. The new documentary Soul Power opens July 10th in New York and Los Angeles, and then in staged release across the country. You can find out more information at sonyclassics.com/soulpower. That's our time for another Sound of Young America program. I've been your host, Jesse Thorne, America's radio sweetheart. The show produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our theme music written and performed by Dan Grayson with help from myself. Interstitial music provided to us by Dan Wally. The show is edited by Nick White. Our intern is John Kim. You can find us online at MaximumFun.org, and you can always email me your thoughts about the show at jesse@MaximumFun.org. Okay, we'll see you next time right here on the Sound of Young America.
This message comes from Schwab. With Schwab investing themes, it's easy to invest in ideas you believe in, like online music and videos, artificial intelligence, electric vehicles, and more. Schwab's research uncovers emerging trends, then their technology curates relevant stocks into over 40 themes to choose from. Schwab Investing Themes is not intended to be investment advice or a recommendation of any stock or investment strategy. Visit schwab.com/thematic investing.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear, it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.